You're listening to the ILS podcast. Now here's your host, Richard Munoz.
Hello and welcome to the ILS podcast, a podcast brought to you by the International Law Section of the State Bar of Texas, where our mission is to provide you a short and topical podcast that makes international law relevant no matter what your area of practice or business. Today, we will be talking about tips for outside counsel practicing international law, an in-house perspective. And it is my pleasure to have Dubraska Jamarillo. Dubraska is a senior counsel for Chevron in Houston. She practices in the energy sector. She's a member of the Association of International Petroleum Negotiators, and she is a certified foreign legal consultant with the State Bar of Texas and a member of the International Law Section. Welcome, Dubraska.
Thank you for having me.
As an in-house counsel myself, one of the things I always think about is remember the reasons we exist, right? As in-house counsel, our view or our bosses tend to view us as, you know, expense centers, and we're trying to, you know, manage risk and recover money if we can. Do you have any thoughts on these kinds of things?
Well, I think one of the things that I see from practicing in-house is that a lot of times lawyers do not know the business. You know, they don't ask, you know, you get a deal, but do you ask the real questions like, what's the business goal here? What do you want to achieve? And how do you want to achieve that? And so sometimes maybe the key relationship partner does, but that's not trickled down to the associate who's actually working on the transaction. So I think, and obviously don't charge the client for that, you know, and when you start a relationship, when you're in that courtship, ask them those type of questions and don't assume because you worked on a previous deal that you know what this company does. For example, in Chevron, in Central America, it's not the Chevron brand, it's the Texaco brand. So I think a lot of times it's just asking those type of questions like, hey, why is it a different brand? And I think that would go a long way of building relationships and also saving costs in the long run because you will be more efficient in the work you do.
You know, that's a really good point about knowing your business. What would you recommend? How would you recommend that an outside counsel get to know what the business is? Is it simply a matter of asking questions or is it other than that?
I think it's a matter of asking questions. People love to talk about what they do. It's just, it's a general thing. And so I think it's asking those questions, asking for meetings with the business. I have always, every time a law firm has asked me for meetings with our business development team, they've been open to it. And so because internally, we want to our lawyers to be our partners more than someone who just writes a contract. So don't be afraid to ask for those meetings at no charge at the client. But again, asking those questions, you know, what keeps you up at night? Those type of things will go a long way.
One of the things as an in-house that you don't like is surprises in the billing. Any thoughts on those?
So when an in-house client, lawyer has to spend more than 15 minutes kind of deciphering what a bill is about, you know, it erodes the relationship. It really creates this burden on us and you feel like, oh my God, I have to deal with this again. And over time, it's just, you'll start sending work to other law firms. And I think I understand that there's a lot of work in the outside firms and there's a partner that may be reviewing all of the invoices, but just taking some time to clarify before you send it over. And something I don't know if it's a practice in the US, but a lot of times I get the bills from I'm an administrative person and the partner is not copy. So I have to send her a question and then she has to copy the partner and then the partner returns on it. So I feel like it will be a more personalized approach if it's actually the partner sending in and like, hey, Dubraska, we worked on this deal. You might see additional hours because we spent that on this. Just maybe getting ahead of those potential questions that I have.
That's a very good point. I know one of the things that I like to say is try to make your bills bulletproof so that I'm not guessing at what I just got charged for.
And, you know, sometimes there's a fair explanation on the other side. So I'm not saying don't trickle down, don't delegate, because we do want to empower those younger generations of lawyers to get significant work and to get exposure to their clients, but do it in a way that, like you said, doesn't make us guess and be transparent and upfront about it.
Now, I want to talk about an article that you wrote. One of the things you said was, never underestimate the lawyer you meet, regardless of where they work or what they do. What did you mean by that?
Well, I think starting earlier on in my career, a lot of times I would be in meetings, and yes, I do work for, you know, transactions outside of the US, but I live here in Houston. So a lot of times I get questions like, hey, do you know a state lawyer? Do you know an employment law lawyer? So I don't limit yourself. Think outside the box of lawyers you meet, because they could be a reference to a deal, or they can be a reference to some work laid down the road. Just because we didn't go to the same university or we don't play golf together doesn't mean that I cannot be a potential client, and or I can connect you to different people. So I think it's just a lot of times we think of the present, like who can bring me business now, but you also have to think about who can bring me business down the road, because people evolve, people change jobs. You know, just in my 10 years being here, I'm in my fourth company, and I'm obviously now in a bigger corporation where a lot of times I'm down the hall from someone who's practicing environmental law. And we have lunch together, and she might say, hey, you know, I'm working on this deal. Do you know someone who might have this specific expertise? And so it's, I think it's a missed opportunity if you don't think outside the box. We live in Texas, which, you know, it's a home to so many international, multinational companies. You know, you have Toyota in Dallas, you have tech companies in Austin, obviously oil and gas, but to limit yourself to think, oh, you know, I represent a widget company in Deer Park, I'm never going to do business internationally. Your counterparty could be the Mexican NOC who just bought a refinery from Shell. And so, you know, you have to understand, you never know who might be across from you in a transaction.
What are some of the things that an outside counsel can do?
I think the main thing is to stop networking or relying on your old network and actually building true relationships. Traditional networking is just not working anymore. You know, and especially after COVID, I don't think we're going to have those huge 300 people events where, you know, car swapping has become obsolete. People, I mean, I don't think I remember the last time I used my car. And so I first of all think small. If you go to an event, think about meeting one person but actually making a true connection with them. You know, having 3,000 connections in LinkedIn might be great, but at the same time, if you're reaching out to someone new in LinkedIn, just don't send them a note like, hey, I do X, Y, and Z. Just try to connect like, hey, I saw that you were a fan of the Texans. You know, I am a fan of the Texans as well. Did you see the last game? Try to build connections on commonalities, because I've always felt that the legal profession is a people's business. And so we're not a commodity. We hire lawyers based on trust and of connecting with them. And so, yes, you know, they might be in a big firm, but if you have a connection with someone who's in a different firm, you might send work their way. There's actually a book called Stop Networking. And actually working on shared interests, goals, you know, so kids is an easy one, but if you don't have kids, there are so many, what social issues are important to you. And that will make you more successful at your work. You know, I've heard a lot of times, you know, this is a great lawyer, but it's so hard to connect with them. And especially with younger generations that are looking for meaningful relationships. You know, we want to hear about, if you're outside counsel, you know, you're a real person, you know, you took a trip.
Yeah, you said something real interesting that, you know, we hire people based on trust. And that's such a true statement, because you can be the best lawyer in the field, but if I don't feel comfortable dealing with you, I'm not sure if I'm going to send business your way.
I totally agree. I think that, like you said, you could be very smart. And I know, and now we don't talk about soft skills. We talk about people skills again. So it's all about people. In one of my recent negotiations with a big oil company, the business guy was like, I think our lawyers are friends, just because we had a really genuine conversation about something that was important to both of us. We connected. She, in fact, had been to Maracaibo, where I'm from, and it just made the negotiation so much easier. And again, we weren't talking about the personal issues. It was just talking about a city that was dear to her heart, where I was from. And so I think it goes a long way.
You made a distinction between soft skills and people skills. Do you, what is that in your distinction in your mind?
Well, I think because it's more about this, there's this whole new concept about people and actually connecting, what's important to them outside of work, et cetera. So That's why there's this new tendency among, you know, especially HR people, just to not call them soft, because I think when you give them that connotation that it makes you soft, you're like, oh, I'm not going to be a good attorney in negotiating this. But when you see that maybe as people skills, you feel like, oh, this is about connecting. So that's why there's a shift in just changing the concept from soft, where people might think it's vulnerability, or, you know, that you lose some leverage in the negotiation, and shifting to a mindset of people.
Given the prevalence of emails, do you have any tips on using email?
You know, sometimes we lose the tone in emails. I think a lot of times we forget to pick up the phone, I think, of like, because emails don't have tone. So maybe if you want to be direct, but there's always like at least a hello in a phone call. So I think it just helps to get exposure, ask questions. It goes back to having those candid conversations. If you're, you know, a younger associate who's working on a deal with someone in Mexico or someone in the Middle East, you know, asking your partner, hey, you know, are there any cultural nuances I need to be aware of? But again, it's thinking beyond just writing on a paper. It's thinking about, I need to build a relationship with these partners because my success on this deal depends on them getting some governmental approval. So I think it's asking those questions, and they're not dumb questions. I think it's fair and humble to know, hey, I've never worked with someone in the Middle East. How can you approach this?
Any other tips that you would give?
To give feedback. That's another thing that I think we're missing in the legal profession, is asking for feedback. Because I have never been asked, hey, you know, how do we do in this project? What can we improve? Have those crucial conversations, because I can tell you, a lot of times, coming from a good place, I can tell you, well, you need to take some writing training on how to make this shorter. And I did that the other day. I actually sent a lawyer. I was like, look, you need to train your attorneys to write more concise.
That's a really good point, because it goes back to two of the things you said earlier. One, know the business. If you know the business, then you'll know how busy in-house counsel is. And then you also said, be a true ally. Can you give me a succinct definition of what you think a true ally is?
I think it sums up someone that you trust and that you can call on when you have a question and not fear, oh my God, how much this is going to cost me. Like, set the base work. And it happened to me the other day. Like, I was working on an MOU, but all I could find were English versions and I needed a Spanish one. And I called someone up and I said, look, I don't want to overcomplicate this. I'm not going to guarantee any work. Can you help me out? And the person 10 minutes later sent me two MOUs in Spanish. I call that an ally, because I didn't feel like I had, you know, they didn't overcomplicate it. I didn't feel like I had the pressure of sending business their way, but they'll be top of mind next time I may have a deal.
If you could give them one takeaway that you think would really help them, what would that be?
Connect and ask questions.
Well, that's wonderful. Dugaska, I really appreciate you spending the time with us to kind of give us some tips and traps. If someone needs to contact you or wants to talk more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can always connect with me on LinkedIn. And like I said, it's always better when you get like that specific personalized email. It makes it always stand up in the inbox.
Wonderful. Well, Dubraska, thank you very much for being on the show today. And we really appreciate, remember, connect and ask questions, folks. Thank you very much,
Dubraska. Thank you for having me.
And now it's time for coming announcements from the International Law Section. Did you know that the State Bar of Texas International Law Section is holding an essay contest on the topic of international human rights? For complete contest and official rules and guidelines, please visit https://ilstexas.org/human-rights-committee for more details.
This has been the ILS Podcast. Music, Wanderer, Take 2 by Admiral Bob, copyright 2020. Licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. Available at http://dig.ccmixter.org/files/admiralbob77/62202ft:sacjoe22.